Welcome back to the Follow the Lead podcast, a Christian leaders podcast, where we walk alongside faith-driven entrepreneurs and executives, helping them seal their identity in Christ, release control, and embrace peace. Brought to you by Greg Fay Insurance. If you haven't talked to my man Greg yet, do so today. GregFayInsurance.com for the coverage you need and the customer service you deserve. Today on the podcast, Leo Severino, the producer of Cabrini, which is this incredible story about this amazing nun in Chicago. It's based off a real life story. And in our conversation, we talk about his journey of being a producer, what it means to do this type of movie, Angel Studios. We talk about this and so much more. Leo is this incredible thinker. He's got some deep, deep thoughts. I appreciated his heart. I appreciated his story of telling ability for Francesca Cabrini and the missionary sisters, the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Such a good conversation, and I think an even better film. I cannot wait to have my family sit down and watch this film. I'm so excited about this story. I think it's one that we all need to be reminded of and maybe hear for the first time. You're going to love this conversation with Leo. Again, such a deep thinker. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Leo Severino. Leo, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony. Thank you for all your good work. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm excited to jump into a discussion around this new film that you've got coming out and a little bit of your background. How does a lawyer become a film producer and all the different things? But before we get started, I always kind of love to jump into the macro first. How would you describe the calling that God has placed on your life?
I think the primary calling is to be a good father and a good husband. So we try that to the best of our ability. When it comes to what's happening in film production, you know, it was a circuitous route. It was a roundabout route because I didn't expect that I would be working in production or writing or anything like that when I was studying undergrad in philosophy and even when I was in law school. But I happened to go to law school at USC, University of Southern California, and had a very heavy entertainment presence. And so just kind of by providence, I was able to get an internship, a summer associate position with 20th Century Fox my first summer when I was in law school. And when I saw what was happening on the lot and it was very exciting, I thought, oh, this is something very interesting. And that's kind of how I got into production. I wound up working at a law firm for a couple of years, and then all the people that I knew at Fox kind of moved up the ladder, and one of them became the executive director of the Producers Guild. And he called me and he said, you know, we can use a young associate. And so I made the move. And then from there, I went back to 20th Century Fox, was director of business affairs for a few years before we started Metanoia Films, which is the film company I've been working for, founding for the last, it's been, I think, 15, 16 years, something like that.
The jump from 20th Century Fox to your own kind of film production, you know, your own business, that had to have been a big, scary jump. How do you discern when God's calling you to something like that? Like, I know that there's a lot of leaders who are always thinking about their next move. How did you know that this was the right next move?
Well, it was both scary and at the same time, there was a peace about it. I knew that I loved the work that I was doing at the time at the studio, but I felt that there was something more, something different. There's a lot of projects that I wasn't exactly happy about the content-wise. I wanted things that were more uplifting, more family-friendly. And so there was just something that motivated me to just explore our own thing. And at the same time, I happened to meet two amazing gentlemen, Eduardo Verástegui, who was doing a film at 20th Century Fox at the time, and this gentleman, Alejandro Monteverde, who was coming out of film school as a coveted director at the University of Texas Film School. He had broken the records for how many awards you can get for a short film. I mean, he's just so incredibly talented. And the two of us met, and we had this kind of similar vision, And we said, you know, let's give it a try. So it wasn't like, you know, a ray of light came down. It was like, you know, you need to do this or anything like that. It was just, seems like the right thing to do. And then the door started opening up.
All right. Can you give me the genesis story behind the name of your company?
Yes. Well, metanoia is it's actually a word that's in the scriptures. St. Paul uses it for conversion from darkness to light. It's the same word that's used. It's a Greek word that's used in science for example, when a plant grows towards a light source, or when the earth turns from towards the sun from darkness to light. And that's the idea, right? Instead of cursing all the darkness out there, we thought maybe we could light a candle.
How much have your faith influenced the culture of your film selection and what you're doing? Obviously, this latest project is based on a historic figure, but faith-based. And kind of what we've known you for in the last couple of movies, Sound of Freedom and now Cabrini, like those are both faith-based films-ish, right? They're what I call sneaky Jesus.
Well, you know, we're trying to make films that are much more universal. So yes, when you're serious about one's faith, one can't in good conscience try to be involved in anything that's going to be contrary to that. So obviously there's that element, but no, our films, we want them to be universal in the truest sense, where there's certain things that are just by their nature not meant for very, very young kids, but for the most part, we don't want it to be because we're being offensive or we're being overtly vulgar or brash. So we want to make films that you can enjoy with your kids and your parents, and that, you know, the people in heaven aren't going to blush.
When did you become serious about your faith? Give us a little bit of background of your faith story.
Sure. So it was, I was studying in England at the time, and I came across, in my head, is providential. It was one of those as if the light was shining down in a bookstore, in this particular book sort of thing, right? But it was a book called The Problem of Pain by C.S. Lewis. Have you read it?
I have not.
So you know, do you know the author C.S. Lewis?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Narnia, and well, mm-hmm. It turns out he was also
the Four Loves, right? Yeah.
Yes, and a theologian in his own right, and the book, I'll never forget the back cover. I remember reading the back cover. I was studying philosophy at the time, as I mentioned, and you know, I deemed myself somewhat versed in philosophy. I kind of knew my way around, and I read the back cover of the book, and it said, "If God is all powerful, He can do whatever He wants. If God is all loving, doesn't want anyone to suffer. Yet there is suffering in the world. So either God is not all powerful, He's not all loving, or He doesn't exist." Something that, well, you know, that's the problem of pain. And I thought, well, that's an interesting, you know, conceptual dilemma. How do we reconcile this, right? And I had, you know, God wasn't the center of my life at the time, shall we say. And so I just thought, as a purely philosophical, theological dilemma, how do you reconcile this? And I couldn't in my own head. I thought, well, there's something here, right? If I love someone, I don't want them to suffer. And if I'm all powerful, I would do whatever I want to stop it. So how does this make sense? So I bought the book and I started reading it. And it's one of those things where I started reading it, I think like at 7 in the evening. And I think I finished at like 7 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
It's one of those things that was just this kind of dark night of self-examination, at the end of which I thought, there's something here.
The next phase in your faith walk, what did that look like compared to the years before? Like, what, when you decided to make God the center of your life and start shifting things, what were some of the practical things that changed about who you were?
Well, it was somewhat night and day, I would think. There's two things I would say that were very particular. One is this notion that I can no longer just trust myself. You know, just trusting myself had gotten me so far, meaning without any objective standards, without any moral standards, just kind of doing what I wanted to do. I thought that certainly needed to change, or thinking I knew it all, that certainly needed to change. And then this recognition of kind of brokenness and fallenness. So yeah, I think those two were the most palpable. What about you, Tony?
What about me? Well,
you have that similar experience or no?
I would say that when I decided to take the disciplines of my faith into an everyday basis, like the lordship principle of Jesus in my life really shifted everything for me. Is that when I decided that I didn't want to be the sole decider of all my decisions, that I wanted to defer to God for everything. That was the big shift, and it's still shifting all the time, right? Because it's a constant struggle.
Yeah.
How
do you discern when that voice is from above?
Well, sometimes it's really clear, right? Like God just speaks right to my heart, and other times it's more of a process. And so my number one rule is I try not to make any decisions emotionally. I think emotions are designed to inform our decisions, but not make them.
Yeah.
And then, I always check the scriptures, and then I have an imaginary council of the godly. And I think about it like the Justice League, like there's this really big table in my head, and all of these godly people sit at it, and they're the people that I check in with when I'm trying to make an important decision.
Mm. That's very traditional in a certain sense, right? So this cloud of witnesses, canonization of saints in heaven sort of thing, right? It makes a lot of sense.
When you're leading a project, whether it be Cabrini or something else, how do you create a culture that says your faith is here and you're allowed to be here and just be yourself? What's it like to lead a big project where certainly not everybody on the film is going to be faith-based, but it's got that kind of leaning towards it?
Well, again, we try to make things that are very universal. So it's not like we seek out and say, hey, here's a faith-based project. Let's do it just for faith people. I mean, I don't think that's even concordant with any particular faith, certainly not our faith. So what we try to do is make the best project possible. Right, the entire tradition of one of the great things that Christendom has brought to the world is beautiful art.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about the Pietà and the Michelangelos and the Sistine Chapels and the Berninis and Raphaels and whatnot. Right, some of the most amazing art has been inspired by things that are transcendent, things that are rooted in a faith, and that's what we try to do more than anything is excellence, because we think not only God, but the world deserves nothing less. We try to strive for that excellence, whether we achieve it or not. I don't think it's from a lack of necessary trying when we don't. So, the first step is excellence. So we want to, at every level of the production, we want to strive for that excellence. And our director is very particular. He's very demanding. Right? He has a very particular vision for these projects. And if you compare a Bella to a Cabrini, they're completely different shooting styles, different spectrums, different tones, different camera style. So whatever the project is, it's what is that excellence for that particular project, and that's where we start. And so then the idea isn't to gather people of any particular faith or any particular point of view. It's gather people that are the best,
yeah.
And then use that talent as a collaborative to design something that is beautiful for God and for the world. Right, that's the idea. And I think so far, you can't fault us for trying.
by all accounts, I think it's working. I think it's a good model. How did you decide to take on this story of Cabrini? Like, it's such a fascinating story that I hadn't heard until the publicist reached out to me, and I was like, this story is amazing. And look, I grew up Catholic, so 12 years of Catholic schools. I was Catholic until I became a Methodist pastor, essentially, which that's a story for another day. But I love strong Catholic stories, and this is an amazing one.
Well, thank you so much. No, I didn't know either. Also grew up Catholic, had no idea. This is the first American that was canonized, a saint, and hardly anybody knows her name. And the way I came upon it was, it didn't originate in myself or in our director. There's a gentleman, his name is Eustace Wolfington, who is my mentor. He read at my wedding. I love this man. So he was the person that financed our first film, Bella. Mm. And after Bella, he kind of was done with the movie industry. Right, the kind of funny accounting, the games that are played, he was like, there's much more efficient things to do for good in this world, right? But then years later, we always kept in touch, and he's been involved in our other films. But years later, he called me and said, I really want to get back into the industry. You know, I want to do a special film. And I said, well, great. We've got a couple in development that we could discuss. And he said, no, I have this one story in mind. And he pitched it to me. And I had all kinds of trepidation. I said, this is a period piece. That means it's very, very expensive, right? If it's period, wherever you're putting the camera, there's nothing around here that's really fully the 1890s. Even if there's a building from that era, there's telephone wires and, you know, whatever else, modern windows and AC units or whatnot. I was like, you have to build a whole lot. The wardrobe is different. The props are different. It's just a very expensive venture. And I said, and you're talking about somebody here who nobody knows. It's not like it's built in. People are going to be like, oh, Cabrini, I know her. I want to find out about her life. You know, if it was a Gandhi film or a Mother Teresa or something that already had a built-in kind of awareness, it's like it's going to be doubly more difficult and expensive to get people to even understand what this film was about. So I said, I don't know. And he said, well, why don't you read a couple books on her? And he sent me some books and he said, let's talk. And it was very wise. Because first, I love to read, and then secondly, just like you said, when you look it up, when you look her up a little bit, you realize this is an incredible story. This is an underdog story. It's a story of facing incredible odds, of ridiculous obstacles and adversity, and overcoming. And I was so moved. And I said, okay, now, I know maybe not very many people know her name, but 50 years ago, Soldier Field was jam packed with 120,000 people. That were there to hear about her being made a saint. And so in such a short time, wow, she's kind of disappeared into the wormhole of history. And her plight is a beautiful one. It was one that her heart was set as God put it in her heart to help the hopeless and the defenseless and the people without dignity. And so I just, the more I heard about her story, the more I heard about her health issues. You know, she, as a kid, she had tuberculosis, almost died, smallpox, almost died. Because of that, she almost drowned in the river. Literally at the last second, a man out of nowhere, quote unquote, just kind of pulled her out. And after that, she was only given, her lungs had collapsed. She was only given a couple years to live. And consistently, she heard that the entirety of her life. And cut to, you know, decades later, and she's built the single largest charitable empire the world had ever seen throughout the entire world. As a woman, as a nun, things that weren't seen as compatible with the sort of life that she lived. I mean, it's just an unbelievable, amazing story. She affected millions of people. No one knows her name. So then once all this kind of came into focus, we're like, yeah, there's a story here. We want to do it.
Hey, guys, just pausing this conversation with Leo to remind you to support our sponsors. Without them, none of this would be possible. I'm so incredibly thankful for the investment that they make in this podcast. If you haven't talked to Trent Bargy yet over at Elevate Real Estate, today is the day. Don't wait. Find your dream home today. Maybe your forever home, maybe an investment property. Trent wants to walk alongside you as you make your next right move. He's got all the wisdom. He's one of my go-to guys when I think about real estate or investments or really just he's a financial guy. He just gets it. So talk to Trent today. Also, be sure to check out myfivestarhomeservices.com. Five Star Home Services is HVAC, plumbing, and electric, and they're really there for all of your housing needs. In addition to that, kind of even more importantly, is their profit on purpose mentality. They are so good at pouring back into the community. That's how I got connected with them. I'm so honored to be coaching them and to walking alongside of them as God continues to do amazing things in this Ohio-based company, family-owned and operated. I just love their hearts for Jesus and their hearts for their community. So say thank you to them. If you're looking for someone for HVAC, plumbing, or electrical, I would love for you to connect with them, myfivestarhomeservices.com. Now let's finish up this conversation with Leo. Telling us a story can be difficult in the best of circumstances, but it's especially interesting when the person's not around anymore and you need to honor them, but what they built is still around. And so what was the relationship with the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and Cabrini University? And how do you, I mean, it's not their movie, but it's kind of connected to them loosely. How does that relationship work in the storytelling process?
Well, yeah, no, you know, once we took over the project, it was kind of the vision of the director, and the idea was to make it a very universal film. Like I said, we're not interested in making films for any one particular faith. We're interested in making films for everybody, that we're going to touch something that's universal and kind of touches that human element in us that is where we can be inspired and uplifted. But in this particular case, it was actually a nun that came to Eustace from that order, who said, "Eustace, we need to make a film about Mother Cabrini." And he had the same reaction I had. Why would I do this? And they came to him because Eustace has a very interesting background. Not one of the most interesting things, or one of the many interesting things, is the fact that he invented the concept of car leasing, of leasing a car. Hmm. That didn't exist. And it took him years and all kinds of obstacles to convince the industry that this is a viable way for car manufacturers and consumers to exchange vehicle, this good in service. And he revolutionized the industry. It is now the number one way that cars are exchanged between consumers and manufacturers. And along the way, he almost went bankrupt. And he was at a church praying, and he heard about this woman who would not take no for an answer, and that happened to be Cabrini. And so he didn't take no. He went back to like the bank of last resort and said, "I'm not taking no. I need this loan to develop these systems. It's going to work." They gave him the loan. He revolutionized the industry. So it's always in his head that Cabrini is kind of his patron, because he modeled himself kind of after her go-get-it attitude. And the nuns knew this. And so they came. The nuns are very, very, very shrewd, these nuns. And they came to him and they said, "We need to make this movie." And he's like, "I'm not interested in the movie industry." And they kept pestering and pestering and pestering. 7 years later, right?
Wow.
"We found someone that's going to do the movie. And can you help out?" And he said, "Okay." So he went and they gave a presentation. And the presentation wasn't exactly stellar when it came to the art. And he thought, you can't do this to Cabrini. He's like, "We've got to make a film that's bigger, that's more like a Gandhi-type film, that's more like a Schindler's List-type film. It needs to be at the highest art." And that's when he gave me a call and said, "Let's do this." So that's kind of the genesis of it.
In studying Cabrini's life, I'm curious what you may have picked up about your own relationship with God.
Well, there's a couple of things that stand out in the film that touched myself, the director, the screenwriter, Rod Barr, who's unbelievable. One of them is, she always said, you can serve your weakness or you can serve your purpose, not both. Mm. And that's how she always kind of discerned what God wanted of her. Right? She thought what people are called to is serving this greater purpose, and that the greatest thing that's a stumbling block is our perceived weaknesses. She never let that stop her. She never did. Didn't matter she was at one point bedridden. And she's like, "Well, I could lie here in bed and die, or I can get up and go work and die either way." And she got up and worked, right? So it's that kind of that determination of, I want to do something very, 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 very beautiful if it's in line with my purpose. That was the one. And then the second thing is, she never let kind of the things of the world get in the way if she felt there was a calling to something. And the way she would discern her calling is straight from the discernment of if you, what you've done to the least of these, you've done to me. It's the helping the widow and the orphan, right? It's those sorts of principles that are very clear and basic and godly. And she saw, if that's the case, then God wants it and I want it. And so she always, one of the other things she said was, begin the mission and the means will come. So just start, just go. And then worry about the secondary things secondarily, you know, kind of God would provide mentality. And it's a tough one. That's a walking out on faith in a big way. But I thought, you know, there's something there. There's something I think all of us can learn from that.
I've had the honor of talking to a couple producers before, and not all producers seem like artists, but you have a genuine artist kind of heart to you. And between the writing and the producing, I'm curious, which one do you favor the most?
Oh, well, thank you for that. No, I'm an amateur when it comes to writing. When I'm around giants like Rod and Alejandro, you know, our director and our writer, it's whatever ideas I have, they take it and they bring it to the highest level. Producing is my is kind of my calling, I think, in a very particular sense. But having said that, I think the best producers are the ones that really can understand the art. Because then you can understand. And then people ask often, what does a producer do? So maybe I can answer that and it'll help paint the picture of what I'm trying to say here. There's producers are all over the map, but the classic producer, the ones that I learned when I was at the Producers Guild and the mentors that I mold myself after are ones who are responsible for the project from A to Z, right? From development all the way through acquiring the rights to developing the scripts to then raising the funds to then controlling the budget and the schedule, being in charge of all the different departments and making sure everyone's on schedule and on time, and then going all the way to post-production distribution, all the contracts along the way. That's the producer. He's the one that's overseeing the entirety of it, right? That's a secondary role. To me, the primary role of the producer is to make sure that the direction, that the vision of the director gets onto the screen. Yeah. And in order to do that, you have to understand the vision at a very, very deep, at a very fundamental level. So writing helps that because it helps you get into the creative and now you understand, okay, why is this particular asset so important? Oh, because you understand the subtext of the script, or you understand the shooting style that's happening, or you understand what, you know, why this direction for this particular actor is very, very necessary. And so you're able to then adjust because a budget is a living document. It's at every moment, you know, this cast member got sick, so we have to now shift. Now it requires funds to go from this location to another location because, you know, all those sorts of things are happening in real time. And so you need to be very attuned with what the director wants. And then if there's a budget issue, it's to come to him and say, listen, I understand that this particular instrument, this particular tool, this particular lens, this particular lighting setup was very important for the story. But because of budget concerns, here's the three other things that you've requested that I'm allowing you to choose which one's going to go, because it's a matter of priority, right? And to be able to do that intelligently requires, I think, a deep understanding of the art. So thank you for saying that, but I think it's kind of a function of trying to be a good producer.
That's good. And one of the unique things about our podcast family here at the Reclamation Podcast is that they love to pray. And so when this airs and the movies gets out into the wild, I know that my podcast family, they would love to pray for you and for the film. What prayer should we be lifting up? How can we walk alongside you in this journey? What's your prayer for this project?
Well, I think the first thing, obviously, is that big caveat, right? Like I said, when I first started taking my faith a little more seriously, it was that notion of don't trust yourself, right? Just kind of give up the control. And like, what's that song about letting God take the wheel, right? Something like that. You mentioned a similar. So that's the idea, is for the will of God to be done in this thing. But if it's up to us, there's a couple of things. For every one of our films to get out there, we believe if it's something that is good and true and beautiful, then it's a good thing to be out there. And often it's a displacement. You know, the pie is very limited when it comes to theatrical distribution. And if I had to guess, it's going to display something, probably something that might not be as true or good or as beautiful. So the success of this film isn't hopefully in our best intentions. It isn't purely selfish. It's let's try to do something good in this world. So the better the film does, the broader the footprint can be, the broader the reach, the more projects we can make, hopefully the more evil we can displace and the more good we can do. Now, having said that, you know, we don't believe we're called to be successful. We believe we're called to be faithful. And that faith itself to the true, to the good, to the beautiful, to the godly, that's a success. So maybe the prayer is for us to continue in the spirit of kind of Cabrini, to be faithful to our calling and to do art at the highest level, and then hopefully success comes as a result. I don't know. I think that was a very general answer, but it's the best I can.
That's beautiful. Listen, there's a couple of real gems in that answer. People should go back and listen to it. That idea about we're not called to be successful, we're called to be faithful. If people hear nothing else from this conversation, that would be an amazing way to live. So
that's I can't take credit for that quote. That was Mother Teresa.
Sure.
Who, as an aside, by the way, she was a young nun in 1946, I believe. I think that's right. Who heard about the canonization of this woman, Cabrini. She was in a teaching order, I believe, Mother Teresa. And she heard about Cabrini, she heard about what Cabrini did, and she decided then she was going to leave her order, start what became the Missionaries of Charity, and she modeled her life after Cabrini. So the Mother Teresa we know now that went out to the poorest of the poor, that was her modeling herself after Cabrini.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, layers upon layers. I love that.
Indeed.
Okay, one more question for you. Before I ask it, though, I know that my podcast family is going to want to connect with you all over the interwebs. Where's the best place to learn about where they can watch the film and also where they can follow what God is doing through your ministry and your work?
Well, Angel Studios is the best play. If they go to Angel Studios Cabrini, this is, I don't know if you know Angel, but they did Chosen. They also distributed Sound of Freedom, Dry Bar Comedy, Tuttle Twins, all kinds of incredible projects. And they're just, to me, they're the greatest guys on the planet. And they're innovators. And they're doing things that are very, very in line with what we want to do, which is to make films and to make content that is good, that is true, that is beautiful, that amplifies light, is the way they place it. So all things Cabrini, go to angel.com, and I think it's just /Cabrini.
Excellent. Now, what about you? Are you on any social media platforms?
No. This is the most you'll see of me.
I pride myself on research. You're a hard guy to research.
Yeah, well, no, I don't like to be online at all. I like to keep a very low profile, just keep everything private with my family and kind of myself. You know, producing by its nature, I think, is meant to be more behind the scenes, and I like it that way. So,
yeah. Well, okay, last question I love to ask people. It's an advice question. I'm going to ask you to go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, except I get the name, the season of life that you're in.
All right.
And so I want to take you back to the day that you graduated law school at USC. If you could go back in time, sit knee to knee with that younger version of yourself, hold his hand and look him in the eye, what's the one piece of advice that you want to give him about the journey he's going to go on?
Man. Yeah, that's an easy question, isn't it? You saved it for the end. I would say one of two things. If I was being kind of my best self, I would say that notion that I got right around that time of don't trust yourself. Trust in something bigger, trust in God, trust in principles. But I think what I would say is it's going to be all right. It's this notion of you're not called to be successful, you're called to be faithful, and no matter what happens, it's going to be all right. There's going to be adversity, there's going to be all kinds of stuff. You're going to try to do godly things, you're going to get attacked. There's no doubt about that. But at the end, it's all going to be all right. If you just keep that faith and keep your eyes above, it's going to be okay. I think all of our younger selves could hear that, right?
Amen.
Tony, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for all your good work. Appreciate you so much.
Leo, thank you so much for the work that you're doing to put love and truth out into the world. Deeply appreciate it. And your thoughtful and heartfelt responses today mean the world.
Very nice of you to say, Tony.
I told you guys, a deep thinker. I mean, Leo has got so much wisdom. I appreciated the way he wrestled with the questions. I love his faith and kind of how God is moving in and through all of that. Such an interesting and deep guy. Do me a favor, connect with him. Watch the movie Cabrini. Don't wait. Take your whole family. Check it out. It's an important story that has to be told. As always, guys, I'm thankful for you. I'm easy to find at TW Milt. Follow the number 2leadcoaching.com or follow the number 2leadpodcast.com. All take you to the same place. I'd love to connect with you. So, guys, thank you, thank you, thank you for being part of this community. And remember, if you want to follow Jesus, you must be willing to move.